Okay. So, what do I say again?
And welcome to another episode of Special Criminals. Although I feel like we can change it a bit because I mean it's been a minute, so we'll just say like we're back.
We're back. We're in season two. Okay. So, so hello, everybody. This is, I'll probably just leave a lot of this in of us just going,
Yeah, I
what did
mean,
you
dude, it's been a minute. So for those that have been waiting on us to come back, thank you very much. Like we have missed recording, but I mean, frankly, we've both been so busy that it's been pretty recently that we're like, we want to go back and do that again.
Right. Yes. So we did decide to call this a season two just because it's been about 6 months since we last
Yeah.
recorded or released an
Goodness.
episode. Yeah. So welcome to season two of Special Criminals. I, of course, am Casey, and I'm here with my sister.
Hello, y'all. It's Monica.
Oh,
And
that's right. I
we,
used to say your name.
I know, it's okay. We're gonna get back into the swing of things. So yeah, we've been gone a minute. You know, Casey's had some really fantastic life changes, and I have been like tired all of the time. So, but yeah, no, we are back and excited to be getting feedback from y'all again. Thank you so much for the people that have reached out in our hiatus. It's been
Yes.
really, really cool to see the feedback. I mean, there's been also feedback where you're like, meh,
I know, and
that
that's
wasn't
like
super nice, but whatever.
Yeah. No, we've gotten some people messaging us and talking and all that type of, just reaching out, and then some reviews. Some of them have been really amazing and some of them not. And so it's definitely, every time we got something like really nice and positive, I was like, oh, I want to go back. And then sometimes we get a really negative something, and it was like,
Okay, over it. No, but oh, we're also, I guess we should mention, doing a distanced recording, so to speak,
Yes.
between Casey's little and naps. And I mean, I don't have any of that, so it's just, but it's easier for her to do a video that you guys won't see because I look a mess and I have, yep. Anyway,
Yes,
I
yeah,
look a
so we
fright.
are. It might so all that to say we might sound a little bit different. So bear with us as we're trying out this format, just because again, I had a baby in January, obviously, and just like Monica said, being able to, if I need to, kind of pause here, go deal with him, and do whatever. He's taking a nap right now, but if I have to feed him or whatever I have to do, so we're trying this out, and we'll see how this goes. If it doesn't, we might do a couple. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, and we'll readjust. But be patient with us as we get back into the swing of things here.
Absolutely.
And if you do hear any weird noises or something that can happen when we're doing online things, again, just give us
Well, I feel
patience,
like
grace.
everyone at this point is pretty
Used
accustomed
to
to
it,
like
yeah.
the online, yeah, digital where you're like, oh, you glitched and sounded like a robot for a second. I mean, who
You're
knows? Also,
muted. You're muted. I feel
hello,
like that
hello, hello,
happened.
all the time. Can you see my screen? Can everyone see?
Can
Yes.
everyone see what I'm sharing?
It's, I mean, and part of me is like, y'all, just share all and then like minimize your porn or something if you need to, but like just share your whole screen. What are you doing instead of just,
I
I
know. Yeah.
shared, where is it? You didn't select. Okay, cool.
It's the
Oh.
wrong one. Yeah.
Case, can you hear the air purifier I put under the table, by the way? Right, just making sure. And so as there will be dog interruptions and stuff like that, y'all, so it's normal disclaimers. We will laugh at things that are probably not super appropriate, but if you're new, then sorry, Monica in particular, that's me, is I
Wow.
have a very dark sense of humor.
Well,
Meh.
we both do, but
I
yes.
mean, yeah. Meh.
No, yeah. So we do. So we, I guess we should kind of restate our purpose. And so we do typically talk about people who have a disability or a mental illness or something along those lines, that would place them, in that exceptional category. So, an exceptional could be lower or higher, et cetera. And we talk about how that diagnosis or that aspect of them as a person might affect them
and contributed to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so this guy is a pretty good example of that. And so as we get into it, you know, we'll talk about it a little more. But again, we're not condoning what these people have done. We Absolutely talk about not. The perpetrator. We don't always talk about the victims as far as like a deep dive into their background. Not that we don't want to, you know, respect them, but it's just that it's not the focus of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so then, yeah, so we talk about them. We talk about their mental illness. We talk about how that affected them. And yes, sometimes we laugh at things.
Never. Questionable.
That might be inappropriate. Yes. And if you don't like that, this would be a really good time to, you know,
bugger off.
Pop off.
As the people across the pond would say.
And then, yeah, because that's where this story's from. And then, you know, thanks for trying us out, but you don't need to tell us that you don't like what we do if we're giving you a warning now. So you could just go ahead and
poorly timed drinking coffee. That was awful. It's okay.
But if you do, if you're fine with all that or you have listened to that and you're good, then we're just going to
dive right in.
Yes, get started. Yeah. Okay. So without further ado, I'm going to be talking about, I just hit the headphones. Did you hear that?
No. Mildly, but it's whatever.
This will be a learning experience. Okay. So I'm going to be talking about a guy. His name is William MacDonald. MacDonald. Not Mick, but Mac.
Mac.
Yes.
Well, that's very clearly stated in his name.
Yes. And so he's also called the Sydney Mutilator, sometimes also just called the Mutilator. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he is a serial killer. That's his classification.
Ooh, uh-huh. I love serial killers.
They've also called him the Ripper of gay males. So that's
what? The Ripper? Is that like a playoff of Jack?
Uh-huh. What he would do to the victims, yes. So total, he had 5. But, you know, sometimes you see a lot of distinction between him as, like, quote, the mutilator versus his first kind of brush with killing, which was, you know, so it's like, I think we've all heard about this, where they kind of progress, or they kind of come into their own as, like, a killer.
Yeah,
I don't know how else to say it.
That's about accurate, though, because they start to refine their techniques or their target pool or whatever.
Or what they do, yeah. So they kind of develop. And so he does have 5 total victims, but one was kind of his first. And then after that is where he kind of got into this mutilator persona. Hmm. I don't know how else to say that. Okay. What?
No, I was just
like, you were going to say something.
No, and I know you can see my face now. I'm just processing, like, ew. I mean, I don't know. Now I'm just going through did he do more gruesome later on? Did he find the signature of what he wanted to do after the first one? Was the first one totally random? And then he was like, oh, this is what I want to do. Hence
all
the processing phase.
Okay. So, William MacDonald, his birth name is actually Allen Ginsberg. Okay. So okay. William MacDonald, and also he goes by Alan Edward Brennan, sometimes David Allen. Eventually he goes by Alan MacDonald. So he has a lot of aliases aliases. But as far as his crime and everything, he's known as William MacDonald. So that is what I'm going to call him.
And were these aliases based on like the names he would give to the dudes he was picking up?
So he had jobs in different names. He had residences.
How did people do that? Names. When did this take place?
Well, this was in the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Oh, yeah. So easier to do things like rob banks and.
Right. Yes. Because no one knew. Yeah.
You wear a mask and all of a sudden you're Superman and no one can see you anymore. Like, you know.
Right.
Anyway.
So he was born June 17th, which is today, the day that we're recording. June 17th, 1924.
Ooh.
And he was born in Liverpool, England. He has died, actually, just somewhat recently in 2015.
No way. Okay, yes. With a birth date of the 20s, 1924. I mean, I figured you're just stating that he's dead. I mean, because of course he's from 1924, but 2015,
yeah. Right?
So he was 91?
90, yeah. He, just before, it was like a month before his 91st birthday.
Wow.
So he was 90, yeah. Which to me, I like nice, even round numbers. So the fact that he was 90, I love
yeah,
that.
Well, I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
Anyway. Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was kind of like, wow, he like just died, it feels like just recently. So he did pass away when he was in Australia. We'll talk about that later. I'm not going to talk about his cause of death yet. We'll get to that later.
Oh.
So again, he's also called the Mutilator is how he's mostly known. Also called the Sydney Mutilator, if you want to be specific about exactly where he was. And then Alan Edward Brennan, David Allen, Alan McDonald. You know, I've gone through all those. So like I said before, his victim, he had five victims total. He was really prominent just for like a 2-year span. So 1961, 1962, most of the, and then he was apprehended in 1963 in May.
Wow.
So I guess kind of a 2-3 year span. Mm-hmm. It just, and that's it. All of it happened in that little time.
and then he got caught or he just stopped. Okay. He got caught. Okay.
Cool. Yes. No, he got caught. And he did do everything in Australia. So we will talk about, he kind of bounced a bit around the world, actually. He bounced around a bit, but he did do all of his, like, killings, I guess, in Australia.
Are we sure about that? I mean, if he jumped all over the place, isn't it possible that, like...
I suppose it's possible. But he also,
only claimed five?
No, he actually informed them of the first. So, yeah. So I don't know. I think if there was more, he probably would have fessed up to it, but it's possible.
Huh.
So I'm going to get into a little bit of his life. Now, this is in a long time ago. I don't have like a ton of information as far as his like really early childhood.
Okay. Well, 1924, I mean, they were just coming off of a war. Mm-hmm. Another one was about to start. I mean, not super surprising. Like people would go just, oh, I think I'm going to be Melissa something. And just, then you're just over there and that's your name and that's all they know,
right.
You know?
Yeah. So to start, like I said, he was born as Allen Ginsberg. He was the middle child. So there were three children and he was the middle. He was born again in Liverpool, England in 1924 in June. I guess what they've said about him is that he was an unusual child. So that's kind of the only thing. But of course, like all kids are weird.
I mean, true. And I'm thinking of super like starched Brits back in the day, you know, after World War One. And then, you know, so an unusual child, it just makes me go like, what does that mean?
Well, I'll tell you. I guess he would take long walks at night by himself. And on many occasions, he wouldn't really come home. And so then his mom would have to call the police to go look for him. So he would just go in like the middle of the night, just go
abscond.
Out. Yeah. That's a good word. But he would just go out on these long walks. And then his mom would be like,
okay, where did
like,
we go?
Where are you, child? And so then she'd have to call the police and they'd bring him back. They also said that he never sought company.
Okay,
he
so
never
he was a
wanted,
loner.
Yeah, he never wanted to be around anybody. He remained friendless for most of his life, so never really made friends. Now, I will say right now that as a young person, don't have a specific date, as a young person, he was supposedly diagnosed as schizophrenic.
Did they have schizophrenia as a term back in the day? I mean... Because I feel like for a long time it was like demons, schizophrenia.
So this would have been in the 30s, probably the late 30s, early 40s.
Okay. You keep talking. I'm going to Google was schizophrenia.
Yeah. When was schizophrenia? Good
question. When was schizophrenia not demons?
Although, I mean, it still kind of is in a sense.
Okay, moving on.
So, what?
Sorry, talking out loud. First recognized. Oh, the formal description of schizophrenia as a mental illness was made in 1887 by Dr. Emil Kraepelin. He used the term dementia praecox.
Huh. I feel like we've looked this up before because some of that sounded familiar.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
So it was a thing. So, and apparently psychiatrists diagnosed him. Now, and the only reason that we're talking about this being a little bit strange is especially in men, schizophrenia as a diagnosis like typically tends to onset like in early adulthood, not really like child.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Not like a young person.
Unless something's catalyzed it.
Exactly. And it seems like nothing really did. So it just, all I see is that there's this mention that as a young person, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia, but it does come back. So that's not the only diagnosis he receives.
Oh, okay.
So in 1943, he's 19 years old and he joins the army. So I'm guessing he did not disclose his diagnosis or because I would think.
Yeah, that's kind of I feel like that precludes you. Yeah, from service. I mean, but okay, again, 1943, World War II is just ending.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they may have been hard up for bodies.
Right. So he did, so he joined the army and then he was transferred to the Lancashire, Lancashire Fusiliers.
I can't help you with that word at all. I can't even see
I
it because we're
fusiliers. Liars.
But someone will tell us.
Yeah, like we had that. What's the one girl's name? She reached out from Ireland and she was so sweet. She was like, I just love the way you guys wrongly pronounce
it. I just flub it just so badly, which so I thought like it absolutely made me laugh. But because I feel like we looked up a few of them, but I'm sure because we don't have that beautiful accent that it was like
Becky. It was Becky.
Miss Becky, yes. Okay.
Yes. Mm. Yes. So anyway, so that's gonna be one of them, Becky, that you can make fun of.
Well,
but I do know it's Lancashire, even though that's not how it looks. So when he's in when he's transferred to this, I guess like
what is a fuselage? Okay, that's a Google.
Not
you
a
go
fuselage,
ahead.
It's fusiliers. Fusiliers.
You don't fusiliers? Think that they work on fuselages if they're fusiliers?
I mean, maybe. But he was transferred to this, like, thing. And he was...
Okay, I'm sorry.
I need to cut out. I'm either going to cut it out or just let it go because it's like, welcome back. Okay. So he's transferred to this area, and then he was actually raped.
Ew.
So he was raped in an air raid shelter by a corporal who threatened him with death if he told anybody.
That's terrible.
Yes. So now I've seen two different things, okay? One, I've seen that this is kind of what drives him later when he's killing people. Okay. And what he does in, in all of that, this is what's tagged as like,
The onset the or thing. Like the catalyst? Well, did he go bob it on these people?
I don't want to tell you yet.
Okay.
But this is what's kind of deemed as like, well, that's like he was, like people have talked about when people are traumatized and like, oh, they're killing that person who caused them trauma like over and over and over. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this is kind of what it's like. Oh, he's getting back at this corporal who raped him. Okay.
Man.
So that's one thing that's been discussed. The other thing is that at first he was obviously traumatized and didn't like what happened, but then also apparently he realized that he enjoyed it.
Oh, and that would have been like a lot of cognitive dissonance too, where I didn't want this to happen, but.
And then, so then they think that that may have been the thing that made him realize that he's gay, or as they say, homosexual. And it says that this was the start of his homosexual life. That's how they kind of describe it. But then they also note that it was a life at the time, especially a life that would bring him misery and humiliation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, shoot, Alan Turing was chemically castrated, you know,
right.
And he was a very prominent person back in the day, you know?
Yeah. Well, right.
That's just horrible to think about. I mean, one, this thing happens to you. Two, you realize that, you know, this is who I really am. Mm-hmm. But then, like, then you're forever going to have that connection between attack and enjoyment. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's awful.
Well, and then again, to realize that, like, you know, even for him as a kid, like, maybe that's why I didn't really want to have friends. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, if you trail it back and you kind of go, oh, like, my gosh. And then also looking ahead, like they said, like, this is for him, this is bad to realize that, like, oh, I'm gay, you know, because at the time it was not accepted. You know what I mean? And you'd get in trouble for it.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
You know? And so I could see that being very disruptive to him as a person. So, he serves in the army for about 4 years. And when he's coming out of the army in 1947, he is again diagnosed with schizophrenia. So he does have, like I said, the kind of follow-up. Now, as he, with that second diagnosis, his brother has him committed to a mental asylum in Scotland, which in the 1940s is probably not a good place to be.
No.
It's described as something that was straight out of the Dark Ages.
Oh no. Baths probably and electroshock and
Yep, exactly. So we're gonna talk about that. So the cells were, it says, like, crammed full of people. It was always freezing cold, and he did receive electric shock therapy or treatments, quote, every day.
Every day.
Yes. And if you're doing your mental math, he was 19, so he's 23, right? When he's coming out of the army, 23, getting electroshock therapy every day. And he was in there for 6 months.
Oh, no.
Until his mom could get him out.
Where was the mom? I mean, I don't know. That just seems like a weird path. So you commit someone against their will after they're an adult, and it's not even like your spouse or child. It's your sibling. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That seems...
But if you think about it, he was in the army, you know, and then gets out of the army with this diagnosis. And so he was probably turned over, like, back to his home or back to his, you know, family. And they're like, ooh, I just imagine them being like, he's broken.
Like, well, fair. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, and then the brother's like, ooh, I'm going to put him away. So I have no idea. But after 6 months, his mom comes and gets him out. So, again, you can just imagine what that could do to a person. So as he grows older, and a lot of this I'm getting from an article by Paul B. Kidd, he had a really great article. He like compiled everything really well, but he actually ends up interviewing him later. So it was really interesting to get his take on stuff. But anyways, so as he grows older, like we talked about, he's gay, and he's actively, I guess is how they describe
actively
it.
Actively gay.
So he starts soliciting men in public toilets and bars. They also had these things in, at the time, that comes later, but they have these things called public baths in Australia. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit later, but he starts, soliciting men. Okay. Now, this did make life difficult for him because, as we've mentioned, these were very conservative times, and he ended up having to kind of move from job to job to job because people would start to pick up or recognize the fact that he was gay. And then they would start like taunting him or making fun of him. And then he'd have to go to a different job. So it was, again, it was a really hard time for him and for a lot of other, you know,
gay folks,
Yep. In the, back in this time. So, he does start to worry now about his like sanity. So he's starting to feel like maybe something's not okay. And he does end up, he ends up consulting with a psychiatrist in 1947, and he does talk about his condition. So he's going there to say, I've been diagnosed with schizophrenia, and now I'm really starting to get worried about this, right? And so he says that he starts to hear strange noises in his head. He's seeing things, so it's, he says, like causing illusions. And then hearing voices. So he's hearing noises, voices, illusions, you know, et cetera. So the psychiatrist says, you should go back to a mental institution.
Oh, no, thank you.
Right.
Because no, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean.
So he does for 3 months. And guess what?
More electroshock.
Yeah. But I mean, nothing. It does not help him. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, no, he's schizophrenic.
Right.
Like how in the world could being locked up chock full of people who are also experiencing, you know, hallucinations or their predators or how in the world? And it's not like they had medication for it back then, unless it's here's opium, maybe. I have no idea.
Right. Yeah. Well, no. And that's what I was going to say too, is this whole time, you know, there is no talk of any medication, you know, so he's just.
Any treatment really to speak of.
Right. No, like actual treatment. So, you know, nothing changed for him after being 3 months there. So he is convinced at this point that it's his surroundings, right? So he's like, I got to get out of here. This is, you know, this is not a good space for me, not a good place for me. I just got to go. So he goes to Canada in 1949. Okay. Now, he spends about 6 years in Canada. We don't hear a lot, you know, again, just kind of he gets a job, bounces around. He's openly gay, but, you know, that's kind of a problem. So then in 1955, he goes to Australia.
Okay, right? So he goes back to Australia.
Well, no, he was in England.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Liverpool. England to Canada to Australia.
Yes.
Okay.
So he goes in 1955, he's like, I'm going to start a new life. I'm going to change my name. I'm going to have a new identity. Now he is William MacDonald. Okay. In Australia. So, shortly, I love this guy's article. He says, but this is a quote, but new name or not, old habits die hard.
Well,
and shortly after his arrival, he ends up being charged with indecent assault because he tried to touch a detective.
Oh, no.
Well, his junk in a public toilet.
So just like, hey, you're pissing. Let me have that.
this is going to be where we laugh at inappropriate things. I pictured this scene. One, I was like, okay, did he not know that he was a detective?
Because it's not like you can pull your badge out while your dick's in your hand. Right?
Well, if he's wearing a uniform.
Do detectives wear uniforms, though?
I don't know. This is Australia. I don't know what they did.
I just picture detectives in, like, I have a nice button up and a tie. And yeah. Maybe a fedora.
I don't know. Yeah. Gross. I don't know. But all I was thinking was, like, did he know? Like, was there any indication? And if there wasn't, like, how did that go down? Like, what do you think you're doing? I'm a detective. You know what I mean? Like, what was the...
Well, and that's like a massive faux pas for like dudes, you know. A, you don't drop your pants all the way to the ground or you're at the urinal. But, you know, you leave a buffer of a urinal.
Space.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and you certainly, I believe, don't try to go and touch other people's penises while you're in there.
Well, I would hope
I think that's also code. Guy code. So he does, and he is arrested. Okay. Again, they call it indecent assault.
And then now I'm trying to picture how do you put yourself away, get your pants back up, and then also throw cuffs on this dude?
I know, arrest somebody as your, I don't know. So, and then I wonder too, if this guy is like, he tried to touch my penis. And then they're like, did he? Like, how would you prove that? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to get arrested, I'm not saying he didn't do it, because obviously this is something that he did a lot, but I'm just saying, like, you know, well,
and I, you know, I support law enforcement, like the good cops, of course. But I mean, think about how many things go down where it's like, nope, I saw him do it. Mm-hmm. You know, so obviously,
I'm sure he
did it, but
right,
maybe there's corroborating witnesses. Like, oh no, I saw it. He reached for his penis. Yeah. Like, I don't. What?
Well, yeah, because then I thought too, like, that detective probably would not normally like fabricate a story about some guy trying to touch his junk, and so it probably, you know what I mean. But still, it just, the whole scene to me was just very. Interesting, I will say.
Okay. And what if it wasn't the first time that this dude's like claimed that, like, well, I don't know, Clements, this is the fifth penis grabber of the month. You know?
These guys just keep grabbing your penis, dude. What are you doing?
I mean, now I just have to see it, because there must be something, like,
there's got to be something going on. Like, maybe he has like glitter or fireworks. I don't know.
Oh,
anyways. Something attracting. Okay.
Just a jewel. Okay, moving on.
Are we going to get in trouble for like, that's inappropriate? Okay.
Well, yes, it's inappropriate, but it's also funny. And we're not making fun of anybody in that way, because a disclaimer for that, you know, those that don't know, I have a wife. I am gay. We are not making fun of gay people. We're making fun of this dude.
This particular situation, yeah. Okay. So anyways, so he does that, and he is, you know, arrested. So he's in the capital of, it's in Adelaide, which is the capital of South Australia.
Okay.
But he was placed on a 2-year good behavior bond. And so I think that's kind of like parole, basically.
Don't touch people's penises and you're fine.
Yeah, like, please don't touch wheeze, which is what we call it in this house. Because I just can't, like... It's just weird to hear like a, you know, small child say like penis. I know there's this whole thing about you should talk to kids about their appropriate parts. You know what I'm saying? The names of everything. But it's just weird. And like, I think if you say my wee, like if a boy says my wee, I think everybody gets what that means. So that's the word that we use.
Yeah. So. It's not like, I don't know, Summer and I were watching SVU at one point, and girl with Down syndrome, she's in her 20s. Of course, this is a dramatization. But she gets assaulted, and the mom has like sheltered this girl, and she knows nothing about sex, assault, nothing. And when her also mentally low boyfriend was like, I told her what sex was, and she said, no, that's just exercise. And it was like, oh, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it's for reasons like that. You know, you don't call it something like my sneaker.
When you're trying to teach kids, because I saw a story about this, and it said that there was a little girl, right, who was talking about, like, talking to her teacher, and she said, oh, yeah, the other day, I would say like six, maybe seven, but a young girl, my uncle licked my cookie.
I saw that same article.
Yes. And so then the teacher was like, well, just tell your mom and you'll get a new cookie. You know what I mean? And then it come to find out that the mom taught the girl that her hoo-ha, her vagina, was called a cookie. And so then it was like, ooh, yeah. And I cannot imagine
being that
realization.
Teacher?
No.
Ugh.
But then also like how it's so tricky, especially with young kids. But then it's like how much you go, what's your cookie? What did it look? What flavor? You know what I mean? Like how much do you dig into just innocent things when – but come to find out that was not an innocent thing, you know, so anyways.
Well, and when they're that young, you also don't know what's tattletaling. I mean, it just reminds me of the teacher that mom observed, who's a kindergarten teacher, and he had like Mr. Tattletale on the wall. And when it was a tattletale, I need to go complain. He told, go tell Mr. Tattletale or whatever. And she said she'd watch these little kids like, like point and like be upset. And then when it was a big thing. Yeah. And then when it was a big thing. You know, so it's just, that's real tricky. Like, y'all give your children appropriate words for their privates.
Well, yeah, yes. But also, too, like the other day we were talking about, so my older son was talking about, well, no, it's probably like a year ago. No, maybe like 6 months ago, but whatever. So we were talking about broken bones. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cause he saw something. He was like, well, how do you, he saw a video on how do you heal a bone, right? So how does that happen? And so then he said, like, how do you break a bone? And so then my husband told him a story about like, oh, when I was a kid, I broke my arm, you know, by skateboarding and da, da, da. So he was talking about that. So then like for a month, my son started talking about, I broke my arm. Right. And it's like, no, he didn't. But he was just regurgitating this story. You know what I'm saying? So I had to keep saying to him, no, you have not broken your arm. Stop saying that. You know,
well, that was like, your dad. Like, I mean,
yes, but that's what kids do. So anyways, moving on. All right. So he's on this 2-year good behavior bond. Don't do that anymore. And then he moves to, I'm going to say this wrong, but he moves to Ballarat? Ballarat?
Here, spell it. Now I want to see how they...
B-A-L-L-A-R-A-T. Ballarat. Ballarat. I'm trying to say it like...
Oh, apparently there is a ghost town in Trona, so it's not too far away from us, named that.
Oh.
Y'all... Well, that's annoying. They should have pronunciations of words like that because... What's that? I am not Australian.
Maybe they can't type phonetically in an Australian accent. Okay. So it says that he – okay. So here's another incident, right? So now he's working so he moves, okay, and then he's working in on a construction site. So he gets another job, but then his work – his coworkers basically start to get – they start to figure out kind of again – who he is as a person. So, you know, he's gay, but he's not like, he's apparently not really able to hide it or something. Cause like everybody he says, everybody that he works with and everybody that he's around ends up finding out, and they just like are relentless. And so this group of people on a construction site, I'd imagine you could probably figure out youngish men. But they end up like beating him up, and they say because he's a poofter.
A poofter. And I just put in the chat how they say to pronounce Ballarat. That doesn't help me at all. So just wanted to.
It does not help me at all.
A poofter.
A poofter. So
it's so funny. It's like, that's what is that better or worse than like a fairy or a queen or a.
I don't know, but I like it. I think it's fun. A poofter. And then I thought, so this is, it does seem to me that this is like, you know, across the pond term, because I don't think we really used it over here. But I was like, is there, if there's a word that like the gay community can take back, I just wish it was this one because I just, it's just funny. I don't know. I know it's obviously, you know, not funny, but it's a fun word that's on.
It is a fun word. I mean, not when it's used in probably a pejorative manner, but. Right.
Poofter. I don't think it was here. So that's what they basically gave, like beat him up for, is because he was being a poofter. So it's just,
I was so sorry. Like,
And then this next part made it sound like we're talking about, you know, like 10-year-olds. So he retaliates by buying a very sharp knife and slashing the tires of their bicycles.
Their bicycles.
Like, how old are these people? Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe everybody in Australia rode bikes to their construction jobs. I don't know.
I don't.
So basically, he in Australia again. He bounced around from job to job, and then moved from state to state because of his, you know, because he was gay. And then eventually, people would find out, and then he'd get made fun of, and then he'd move again. So he had a really, which I get, is has got to be tough when you.
I'm not going to discount that at all. I mean, you know, I it makes me feel very fortunate that we live in the day that we do because, you know, I can't imagine having to uproot everything or go into all hiding. And then,
right.
My God, in like the United States, if you got caught for being gay, that's it. It's like pretty much a death sentence, you know, or you'd have to go move to like Stonewall or something in San Francisco.
Right. Like,
just, you know, all right, well, this is just where I live now. So,
yeah. Right. So he, you know, and of course, as this time in his life is very tumultuous. He also, they said, kind of talked about, like, people would talk, make fun of him or talk about him behind his back. And then he would always kind of go back to this corporal who raped him, right? So this was always kind of in his mind that, like, this, like, in his head.
If it weren't for him.
Exactly. He really kind of blamed him for what he's basically his suffering now, you know?
So, I agree. I mean, if this dude would have gone the rest of his life knowing, like, something's not quite right, but not being able to ever determine what that something is, because whatever, you know, I agree that this dude in more than one way ruined his life, you know, his chance for normalcy back in that day. You
Absolutely.
Know?
Yeah. So that brings us to basically the start of his murdering.
His murdering career.
Yes. Okay. So, like I said before or earlier, his first murder was not like part of his, what he'll be known for as like the mutilator. So this first guy, he was in Brisbane, which is the capital of Northern Australia, state of Queensland, in 1960. So this is a guy, he's 55 years old. His name is Amos Hurst, okay? And in 1960, so he would have been, what, 46? No, 36?
Oh, geez.
36. He's 36. So he makes friends with Amos, and they're outside of something called the Roma Street Railway Station. They've been drinking together in a nearby hotel. Okay.
Super sorry to interrupt. I think it's Amos.
Amos. Oh, okay.
I was like, Amos sounds weird. Okay. Amos. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'll just say Hurst. So they're drinking together, and then they go back to Hurst's hotel room. Okay. And then they keep drinking. So now they're drinking more beer. But they're in a room, you know, privacy and all that, right? Mm-hmm. So then all of a sudden, MacDonald starts strangling Hurst.
They were drinking and
they were sitting on the bed drinking. And so what he'll describe is basically that he just had this urge. And he talks about this a lot when he talks about his crimes, is these urges. And the corporal will kind of come up. And so he'll talk about like these urges and to get back at this corporal, and then it'll grow so strong in his description that then he acts out, and this is what's happening. Okay. So he said, this one article said he probably had no idea what was happening because he was like drunk out of his mind, Hurst. So he's being strangled, and then he had, he hemorrhaged. So then all of a sudden he started spitting out blood. So he was hemorrhaging.
And then this is Amos?
Yes.
Amos. Wow. Amos. So he's being strangled and now he's
hemorrhaging.
Just hemorrhaging.
Yes.
Ew.
So then he's getting like blood all over MacDonald. And then he basically talks about the fact that he punched him. I don't know if he was mad because like, no, you're getting blood all over me. Like I was strangling you. I wasn't expecting blood and now I'm angry. But he punched him and then he dies. Hurst is dead.
Oh, my God.
He's dead. Yes. So.
Wow. Yeah. So this dude had something pre-existing beforehand.
Yes.
I mean.
And that's actually going to come. That's part of the reason that nobody ties MacDonald to this crime. Because it looked like he had like a heart attack and died in bed, basically. So I'm a little bit ahead of myself. So Hurst falls to the floor. He's dead, right? Because he punched him in the face. He's dead. So then MacDonald undresses him. He puts him in bed. He washes up. He kind of cleans everything up, washes himself, and then he leaves. Right? And so then he's terrified that like at any moment they're going to come to my door. Like they're going to find me somehow, right? Like even though there's really no major connection between these two people,
oh my
but
God.
They're going to come and they're going to find me. and I'm going to be arrested. But nothing happened.
I need to run.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I'm just, so they think it's natural causes. Mm-hmm. I mean, but.
I'm going to talk about that.
People, when they don't, okay, I was going to say, when people have heart attacks, they don't have a bruise on their face from getting punched and strangle marks.
We're gonna, yeah, know? I'm going to talk about that. So he said that he waited and he looked every day in the paper for this like strange murder in a hotel, you know, something like he was just looking to see if this was going to be noted and nothing happened.
They're hot on his heels.
Right.
Oh my God.
And then 5 days later, he sees an obituary. They call it a postmortem. Oh no, I'm sorry. Not that. They see an obituary in the newspaper.
Oh, okay.
And then, let me see, in the columns. And it said that he died of a heart attack. So then in his post-mortem report, sorry, I was mushing this up.
Oh, I gotcha.
It does say that he died of a heart attack. So it is, I guess it is possible that while he was being strangled, he was so startled that he had a heart attack. But it also says that there's severe bruising on his neck. Okay. Because again, he was strangled. And it said,
well, yeah.
There's a possibility of death by strangulation, but under the circumstances, it could have been bruising from a fight or some other drunken escapade. And so the case was closed because basically he's a known drunk, right? And his blood alcohol level was like through the roof when this happened. So they were like, he probably got drunk, got in a fight, and then, you know, went home and had a heart attack
after. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So it was not really like suspicious. It wasn't suspicious.
The 1960s were wild, man.
I know.
Like, I just can't.
And in Australia. It's like, what are y'all doing? Okay. So, so this kind of led to, he was like, oh, I didn't get caught. Right? Like I killed somebody. I didn't get caught. He realized that he liked it. And so he was like, well, here we go. So this kind of leads into his career-ish, I guess, as mutilator. Okay.
That's just crazy to me. Okay.
Yes. So, all right. So now he, in January 1961, he moves to Sydney. Okay. So he was in Brisbane. I don't know how you guys say it. So he moves to Sydney in January 1961. I like this article. It says he found accommodation in East Sydney.
Accommodations.
But he took a job at the post office. And so he was a letter sorter, right? So he's sorting letters.
Dude, I want that job. It sounds like I sort letters.
Mindless. Yeah, just easy peasy. And now he's under the assumed name of Alan Edward Brennan. Okay. So he gets a job at the post office as Brennan, right? But before long, as we know with William, he's well known around the parks and public toilets that were notorious meeting places for homosexuals.
Notorious.
I just love the way
the homosexuals and the notorious ways. What in the world? You know, like I
love the article.
And in the meantime, like back in the 60s and stuff, they're just the verbiage is so so weird. Like, and this dude, so he's learned that he enjoys killing on top of being gay and has learned that he can just change names like underwear.
Yep.
And just, okay, bye.
I'm going to go be this person now. Yeah. But you'll see the Alan and the William and then the Brennan and the McDonald. Like they all, there's a mush up, but it's never his name.
Okay, that's just so weird.
Right.
Remember in like back in the day with AOL, how you could just like, I want this username now.
Yeah.
And you just change things.
Yeah.
I still have parents that have AOL emails, Case.
No.
Right? Yes.
Why? Why would anybody still do that? Well, I'm sure they've changed. Right? They've changed things up right
now.
Right?
I thought that they were going to go the way of like Blockbuster and stuff.
I do too. Okay. So, sorry, I lost my place. So he is now, like I said, well known in these homosexual spaces. So then he also starts to talk about, this time is when he's starting to hear voices again. So it does seem like when he kind of relocates and he has a change, things kind of calm in his mind for a while. But then after a while, as he kind of starts to settle, he says that it just kind of, everything just starts creeping up. So I don't know if it's like the, you know, he's distracted enough, right? Like, I'm moving, I'm trying to find a place to live, I'm job, da, 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 da. And then when things kind of get stagnant, it just like creeps back in for him, or? See,
and that's so weird. Maybe he didn't find the process of moving and assuming a new identity to be stressful. Like, yeah. I feel like that would be the height of any like ramping, I guess, so to speak, of like any voices and stuff. But I don't know. That's super weird. Like, the way that he describes it and you're describing it just makes me think of like someone who moves to get away from a ghost, and they're like, and it was fine for like 2
yeah.
months.
And then, all and then sudden, it comes back. Yeah. It
follows and then the ghost found me.
Exactly. So it does. He talks about that he had the urge again to kill. So, but he went like about 6 months. So he moved in January and now we're in June. Okay. So June of 1961, this is when his mutilator career began, right? So he starts talking to this guy named Alfred Reginald Greenfield. Now,
That's very posh sounding.
Okay, thank you. So he's 41 years old. Now, I have seen so many different things about Alfred Reginald Greenfield. Okay. I feel like Reginald, anytime there's a Reginald in your name, like, you're like high society. So Some people, some articles and papers describe him as a vagrant, like he's a wanderer. What? But then I found this article that described him. Where did I find it? I described him as Australian royalty.
That's so weird.
And it talked about his family. Let me see if I can find it.
Australian royalty.
Mm-hmm. That's how it – so it's literally – this website is called AustralianRoyalty.net. And it talked about him like as an individual. And then it talks about his family. And so – and it talks about the fact that he was in the war and he served in the army, in Australian army, and did all that. And then it just talks about, you know, him being killed. But this does not list him as a vagrant. So – I don't know, but it talked about his father and his mother and his elder brother and elder sister. So he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 siblings. And then he was the last.
But okay. So this guy may have possibly had a different life. I don't know. I was like, so I'm painting this picture of like this dude who was high society, you know, Reginald, Sir Reginald. And goes to the war, comes back, and then he just drops off the radar. Like, what, did he have PTSD?
Maybe. And that's where, I mean, it's hard to say, because maybe in front of his family, or maybe he did have a very like high society, posh family. And then, but then he was not, you know what I mean? Like, maybe he was kind of a vagrant, but the family didn't want to talk about it. Or, you know what I mean? You know how they tend to hide things like that
back in the day.
Right? Mm-hmm. So who knows? But either way, he runs into McDonald. Okay. And that's not going to be good for him. So Greenfield is sitting on a bench, and McDonald offers him, they list him as a homeless, unemployed blacksmith. But again, doesn't really match up with like Australian royalty in my brain. So I don't know. I have no idea. But he was 41 at the time. Okay. And McDonald's in his 30s. So he says, hey, do you want a drink? So that's kind of how he lures him. Right. And then he lures him to this nearby, quote, domain bath. Okay. And that is what I Googled. Those are the old public baths, like literally, a free public bath. So, he says, hey, I have some more like booze. Do you want to come back over here? We'll hang out. We'll drink. Okay. And so, he also apparently had bought a new long-bladed knife, McDonald, that he brought.
Yeah.
So he was like, he was
long-bladed
knife. So he was on the hunt. Like, that was the purpose of what he was doing. Okay.
Like, like a fillet knife, a fillet knife?
Yeah, I mean, and they're in another article or with another murder. So he does end up buying a new blade every time. Like he buys a new weapon every time.
Like that's his reward to himself?
I don't know. Or no, because he, well, we'll talk about it, but he does end up buying it. Okay. So one of them does actually talk about it being kind of like a fillet knife or a fillet, as Gordon Ramsay says it.
A fillet. Gordon Ramsay. I love him. He probably would find us like super annoying, but yes. Just you can call me a potato sandwich or whatever he does. An idiot sandwich. okay. Anyway.
So they go over, and they're, you know, drinking and they're chatting and they're doing all this. And then they, go into basically like a corner. Okay. So they're like, let's just find a secluded spot, even though like there's not a ton of people, but let's find a secluded spot. We're going to drink. Now, I don't know. And this is never really discussed except for one place I saw it mentioned. I don't know if these men were also gay. So I don't know if they were going to have sex. One site mentions sodomy, but that's the only place I've ever seen it. I couldn't find it in any of my other sources. And so I don't know if that was a component of it. So I'm just going to throw that out there. So I don't know if these men were going to have
sex. So speculated, but
potentially, but who knows? Or if it happened post-mortem, I don't know. None of that is mentioned. So they go into a corner and McDonald basically says that now he's feeling like this overwhelming urge to kill him. Right. But he waits until, he had finishes drinking and then he falls asleep on the grass. Okay. So then at that point, McDonald gets his,
Super sorry. I thought they were still at the public bath thing.
They are, but it's like near the water and near like, it's like almost like a park type of a facility, like a park building,
okay,
you know?
Okay.
So he gets his knife out and then he stabs him in his neck.
Error.
Yeah. So he, then he just kept stabbing. Okay.
Oh.
So he ends up severing his arteries in his neck.
As you do.
Right. Blood was like everywhere, but apparently McDonald was prepared because he had brought a raincoat.
Oh my God. I was going to say like a poncho or something.
And I was like, that's hello, Dexter. Amazing. Yeah. So.
And also in Australia, I feel like it's super dry over there, like our desert, you know? To some degree. I mean, wouldn't that just, that's some weird dude in a poncho.
Well, apparently, and he ends up doing this more than once, but he'll put it on just as he's about to kill them. So it's like, he doesn't have it on all the time. He just puts it on and then he starts stabbing.
That's awful. No. Like someone's like lizard brain was not working properly where it's like, I'm drinking this dude. And now he's putting on
a raincoat
and gloves. That's super weird. Is that a knife in his body? And then just let me just roll with it, I guess. Like,
So that's what. So he does, right? So he stabs him. I think we'll find out. It's like a 30 times or something like that. I'll get to that in a minute.
Goodness.
So then what he does is he takes off. Oh, and I'm sorry. He then takes off Greenfield's pants and underwear. He then cuts off his penis and testicles.
Full bobbit.
Uh-huh. And then throws them in the harbor. Okay. He wraps his knife in the raincoat, puts it in a bag, and then walks home. So like he has I picture a satchel or something. He has like a bag. So he wraps the weapon up in the raincoat, puts that in the bag, and then just walks home.
Oh,
okay. He stops at some point. He washes his hands and his face, and then nobody really noticed him. So he continues on. So now this does make it in the paper, right? Because this is pretty crazy.
How could you? The dude's been stabbed at least 30 times. He's missing twigs and berry.
Uh-huh.
Twig and berries. There we go. Like, yeah, I mean, you write about that, I would think, you know?
Yeah, so it was all over the front pages from you know, pages of the papers. So they called the work of a maniac, and now he gets the name the Mutilator. Okay. So now that, but they were not allowed, the press was not allowed to print the full details of the injuries, but of course, like rumors, right? Like it started to get out there anyway. He was stabbed at least 30 times. And then what the paper said was certain parts of his anatomy were found in the harbor.
Stop it right now. Like, you don't word it like that. If it's a hand, you say a hand.
Right.
If it's, you know.
But they didn't want, I think it's one of those things that they didn't want to leak all the details, because then if they found someone who knew the details, you know what I mean? I don't know. Whatever. So, but I guess the police divers were looking for the weapon and then found
a dick. They just found
They found his parts instead.
Like,
which, can you imagine being the diver? Like, do you think this has anything to do with?
I mean, do you think it just bobs along like a jellyfish? Like,
I have no idea. I don't know if they float.
Casey's laughing at my jellyfish arm movement. Like, yeah,
she's like woofing her arms around. Like, okay.
Oh no.
I'm not sure.
Dad, tell us a story about why you quit being a dive team diver.
No, poor guy. He was probably like, And then, I mean, like, I would imagine that the police were not necessarily looking for that. So, like, did the divers even know that his junk had been cut off? Like, I don't know, you know, but whatever. Who knows?
I just ran into it while diving, like, boom.
So then the police didn't really know the motive. But the only thing that they can figure is what would you suspect? When you see a violent crime like that, what do you think?
So, well, someone who knew him had like some kind of like really aggressiveness towards certain parts of his anatomy.
Jealousy, right? Like a jealous rage is what we hear a lot.
I mean, I don't know. We've been watching too much SVU. So part of me goes, I don't know, maybe he had attacked somebody and that male or female caught up with him and ambushed him while he was drunk.
Either way, you wouldn't necessarily expect like a complete stranger who just decided to kill you. Right. So, but the police, like I said, the police are thinking, why would this happen? The only thing that they can think of that might make sense is that maybe this is a jealous ex-lover, or even like they suspected there's a woman. Right. And so maybe like the killer, it's his wife.
It's the partner of,
And now Greenfield maybe was cheating, you know what I mean? Or like the wife was cheating with Greenfield and now the husband is attacking. That's what they're thinking of, some sort of jealousy.
Yeah, I certainly, you're absolutely right. I certainly would not go to, just some random.
Some person, right. So they offer a reward for any information. They come back with nothing. So it kind of stalls. So then a couple months go by, everybody's kind of forgetting. So remember, this happened in June of 61 and now we are in November of 1961 and McDonald goes and he buys another knife. It's a 6-inch blade. Okay. And he gets it from a sports store. So that's where he's getting these. He tells the man behind the counter that he's just going to go fishing. Right. So, but he knows that like he's going on the hunt to kill because he said the urges are back. Like he's feeling these urges. So right now though, we're looking at 6 months, right? So 6 months in between each crime so far. So now he's walking down the street in East Sydney and he sees another 41-year-old Ernest William Cobbin. Okay. And he's already staggering. So like he sees this guy.
This is just a prime target.
He's like perfect because he's already drunk. So he lures him over to a park. They sit again in the public toilets and they're drinking beer. And this one literally says that Cobbin made no comment to his new friend when he saw that he was putting on his raincoat.
Oh, and okay. And also, how do you lure a grown person to anywhere? Like,
I have
I just booze. Him, like, holding a bottle. Yeah. Like, hey.
Well, what he would say is like, hey, I left my bag over here. Like the classic, like picking up a kid. You know what I mean? Like, I have a puppy over here. Like, I left my bag over here with my booze. You want to keep drinking? Like, come on, I'll give it to you. Right.
Yeah, like Bundy. Like, hey, I really need help with something. Yes.
And other than Greenfield, it does seem to be that all of the other victims are like vagrants or homeless or whatever. So I think offering them something to drink is probably going to get them to go places. So, but they're literally sitting like in a toilet, like in a stall. Okay. So it says that Ernest Cobbin was sitting like on top of the toilet seat when McDonald started to attack him. So he puts on the raincoat, he gets out his knife, and they described it as like a like an uppercut, whoosh, but like with the knife, like right under.
Ew. Mm-hmm.
So blood starts spraying everywhere. He severed his jugular vein.
Oh my gosh.
And let's see. So it gets all over McDonald's like face and arms and of course the raincoat that he was prepared. And then Cobbin instinctively is like lifts his arm, you know, so he's like trying to kind of fend off the attacks, but McDonald just keeps stabbing him. So now he's stabbing him on his arms. He's also getting his neck, his face, his chest. So he's just like in a frenzy. And then Cobbin falls. He's dead, obviously now. After so much of this, but even after he dies and he falls from the toilet seat, McDonald just keeps stabbing him. So he can't stop himself at this point.
Dang.
So then he again pulls down his pants and underwear and slices off his stuff. And then, but this time he puts it in a plastic bag. So he brought a plastic bag with him. So he does come prepared every time.
Does he flush it?
No.
Does he keep it?
So he puts him in a plastic bag. Then he takes off his raincoat, again, wraps the knife up in the raincoat, and then puts the plastic bag with that stuff in his little satchel, and Martin leaves. Now, this is a public toilet. I don't know what the makeup of this is. I would think that you would stop and wash yourself off right there, but I don't know if it's one of those situations where it's like, those are just the toilets, and then the sinks are over here. You know what I mean? But it does say that he leaves and then at some point he stops and washes himself off. So for some reason that doesn't happen in the same spot. But
well, I would kind of think that you'd want to leave the area that you just murdered somebody.
True. You know, pretty quickly, yeah. Okay, and if it's like at night, you know, you're probably not going to see anybody. So then when he goes back to where he was staying, he washes off, it just says, the bloody contents of the bag.
Stop it.
So he washes it off with warm water. Okay. Puts it in a new clean bag and goes to bed with it. Like just sleeps with it like a stuffed animal. Very small stuffed animal.
Very small. Casey's making a lot of assumptions about this dude.
I'm just saying like it's not like a big teddy bear, right? So so then he takes So then he takes the plastic bag, the knife still wrapped in the raincoat. He wraps all of that in newspaper and like a brick, you know, kind of like, and then ties it all with a string and then throws it into the bridge in the deepest, over the bridge in the deepest part of the harbor because he doesn't want the police to find this now. Okay.
Well, I'm so sorry. So he wraps up the raincoat, the knife with a brick. Does he also put
the plastic bag? Yeah, it goes in there too.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Everything is wrapped up with a brick and newspaper tied up with strings and then tossed over the bridge in the harbor.
Mm-hmm. I have so many opinions.
Yes.
So many thoughts.
So, so then on Monday, he just goes back to work.
Oh, cool.
And so he's sorting his letters. As if nothing happens. And now the papers are coming out again. The mutilator strikes again, right? And so then the police got a call that, and all they got a call. So this is total speculation again. The police get a call that says there's a murdered man in the toilet in Moore Park opposite the Bat and Ball Hotel. And then he hangs up. No one knows who this caller is. So, you know how sometimes like the criminals will call in their crime? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the case. They never figured it out. So Cobbin was stabbed about 50 times because remember he kept stabbing him after he was dead. Now, the police start to speculate that maybe this is like a doctor, because they said that the way that everything was cut off was like, they said it was like, it was done by a surgeon. Like it was very clean and precise.
I mean, that's just a really sharp knife though.
Yeah. Well, in one good motion, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he wasn't stopped and sawing, but I mean, I feel like.
Right.
If your target's dead,
yeah.
Then you can just swoop.
Yeah. And that's basically, they talked about that, that's basically what he did is he would just kind of lift everything and cut it off.
Yeah, that's how I would cut the head off a fish. I mean, you know, use gravity to just draw up and down. I don't know.
So the police can't find any clues. There are no fingerprints, not even on the beer bottles. And so they think that the mutilator had wiped it clean. No one saw anything except Cobbin was married and had two kids. So it's like they describe them all as vagrants, but I don't know how true that is.
Maybe he got kicked out because he had a drinking
problem. Yeah. Or he just, you know, would go on the weekends and drink. You know what I mean? Like that was his thing.
Like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then police start like hanging out in public toilets because they're like, this seems to be happening a lot. But they're really not. And then they also they have police go undercover as vagrants mixed in with the down and outs is what they called it.
I'm over here. No one can see me, but I'm just shaking my head.
It's so funny.
It's ridiculous. And I feel like you'd smell them from a mile away, like especially back in that time. Like mm-hmm. I had
but remember they had these spray bats?
Well, I mean, it just reminds me of this sociology and instructor, professor, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like really nice dude. We were speculating that he might be gay because he wore his ring on the right hand. Mm-hmm. And so I guess apparently that's like some kind of religious sect difference. But he's like, oh yeah, and I was doing a sociological study on teenagers and such. So I went and blended in with the kids mm-hmm. and observed them. And we're like,
no,
stop it. And he would wear like the little like press cap things. And it just,
no, you didn't.
Like how? No, stop it. Yeah. You did not blend anywhere unless it was like a golf store. Stop it. Like,
like a country club. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then, yeah, so anyway, so that was that. And again, no clues. The police couldn't find anything. They're still offering a reward. So now we're into March. So that was November of 61. Now we're in March of 62. And again, McDonald goes out and he buys another knife. Okay, from the
And what do you do? Just track everyone down that's bought a knife? I mean, right.
Well, and at a sports store, if somebody's saying, I'm going hunting, or like he said, I'm going fishing, like, that's what they're there for. How can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so anyways, so he packs it in his bag again with his raincoat and his plastic bag. So he's coming prepared. It was raining slightly this night. Lucky him.
Ooh, so he didn't stand out in a weird raincoat.
Exactly. So he is walking, in his raincoat, and he's leaving the Oxford Hotel in Darlinghurst, and he follows a guy named Frank Gladstone McLean.
McLean.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so he's walking down Burke Street.
What? We're just the worst.
I'm sorry, Australia. And then he goes past the Darlinghurst police station. So then McDonald strikes up a conversation with him. So McLean is already drunk. I don't know if I mentioned that before. So he's walking and drunk, but he's responsibly not driving. And so, So they're chatting and he says, hey, why don't we go down over here and we'll get another drink, right? So he's, you know, so they round the corner, it says, and as they round the corner, because there's no lights, right? So he takes them down like an unlit alleyway, basically.
Oh, see? No, stop it.
I know. But again, remember, like, men are typically not afraid of other men, right? Like,
true. They haven't grown up like a lot of females, right? Of like, oh,
exactly.
If I'm nice to this person, I might die.
Yes. And McDonald, as we find out a little later, but he's like kind of short, kind of skinny, like not very threatening, right? So he doesn't feel like he has to be like, as I, and it's funny, like as I'm reading about this, I'm like, oh, hell no. Like there would be so many things that we would not do. Yeah. That women would just not do. Even with other women at a certain point, like you want me to go in the bathroom alone? I don't know you. I don't think you probably have someone waiting. Like we just have
all those alarm bells,
but men don't, you know? And so there was a part that like everybody, of course, at this point was like terrified of this serial killer mutilating men. And I was just like, I mean, welcome to our world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, where you do have to be legitimately concerned about like, just being nice to the wrong person.
To the wrong person.
Exactly. Or, you know, getting...
Even if we are justifiably rude, do you know what I'm saying? Like, even if we're rude and we have a good reason to be rude, we also have to worry about like, oh my gosh, what if he... You know what I mean? Like, what if... Blah,
blah, blah. And he's going to wait for me when I leave.
He's going to find my car.
And then being afraid that you might lose your job because you justifiably told someone off or... I don't think men really understand quite how much thought has to go into every interaction.
Yeah. Cause like I said, like men are not afraid of other men.
Typically. Although I feel like they kind of should be because there's a lot of crazy people out there.
Well, yeah. So anywho, so they go down this dark alley. As soon as they get around the corner, he like whoop and just stabs him. Right. So McLean was also a tall, pretty thin man, but he was like over 6 foot tall. Oh, 6 feet tall. Sorry. So,
whoa. And so McDonald is short. And so,
yes. And so,
oh no.
Yeah. So, but they talked about the fact that if McLean wasn't caught off guard and wasn't drunk, he totally could have like destroyed McDonald.
Taken
him. But of course he was those things. And so, it said that he felt the knife, as soon as he felt the knife, he started to like resist, right? But then he kept stabbing him. So now he's stabbing him in the face and he fell, McLean falls. He's trying to protect himself. Then McDonald punches him in the face and forces him off balance, right? And so he's kind of like falling down and like trying to protect himself. He knocks him down. He falls to the ground. And just like that, McDonald jumps on top of him. And now he's just stabbing him relentlessly. So he starts to drag his body a few meters away. Then he takes his pants off and cuts him like he has been.
Snip, snip.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It does say that he cut from the bottom in an upward stroke. So
that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah. So he slices everything off, but he said that this was the first time that he really felt worried because he was near a busy street, right? So they were on a busy street, turned down an alleyway. And so he said that as far as he's reporting, this is the first time that he felt a little worried that he might get caught. But again, he puts his junk in a plastic bag. He wraps everything up. And then he said that he heard voices and a baby crying. Now, again, we have to remember that he's an untreated or poorly treated schizophrenic. So did he really hear voices and a baby? We don't know. So he was like, oh my gosh, there's like, police are going to come. They're going to see me. They're going to find me. So he like kind of goes out and starts like peeking around like this, you know, see like if anyone is coming.
That's not at all suspicious.
And no one is there. So then he's like, oh, okay. So he wraps up his knife in the raincoat, gets his plastic bag, puts it in his like satchel, and he walks away. Okay. Wow. And he also takes the bottle that they had been drinking. So they'd been drinking together as they were chatting and walking. So he takes the bottle and he said that he passed a few people, but no one really paid attention. So he escapes. So then he again washes off the content of the plastic bag in the sink. He puts it in a clean plastic bag. He does what he does again. He wraps everything up the next morning, throws it off the bridge. So then when this happens, everybody is like panicking, right? And so, you know, McLean is found. It's, you know, la, la, la. And now everybody's like, this is the third victim. Everybody, like, So I'm going to kind of move us past this a little bit. They do offer, they continuously increase the reward now as well for any information found. Now, this is kind of a funny story. At some point, a young man, his name was Patrick Royan. He said that he had been attacked by the mutilator. So he's telling police, I've been attacked by the mutilator. And it's not far from when Frank McLean was attacked, right? But of course, it's like none of these are happening in the same places. Like they're similar places, at least the first two. But so they were like, So then he says, it's really close to where Frank was murdered, right? And then he said that the attacker scaled a high fence and then lunged at him with a long-bladed knife, but he missed. And then, but he said he nicked him. He nicked me, right? Like he caught me a little bit. But then he said he started hissing at me.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. This guy totally got attacked by a cat and tried to.
Right. So then it says he described the mutilator as tall.
A cat.
Yeah. He was small and furry. He described him as tall and solid of foreign appearance between 30 and 40. Now, the 30 and 40 is correct. None of that is. None of the rest of it is. So then when nothing came, of course, he investigated. Nothing came of it. And then it was discovered that the guy was an alcoholic. He was undergoing psychiatric treatment, and he had just cut himself and made up the story to get some attention.
That's all I could picture was, yep. This is a really great way to.
15 minutes, right? So then
exactly.
A judge gave him 18 months in prison for that. So I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Well, I mean, wasting resources and all that.
Yes, like, absolutely.
I wonder if that penance, you know, that 18 months was kind of like the old school debtor's prison where, you know, you waste all these resources, you can't pay it back. So to jail you go,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it could be. All they said is that it was an unsympathetic judge. Now I know that we're probably going a little bit long on this one, but it's our first episode back. So
I mean, yeah.
Welcome back. So, okay. So. Now, things in his McDonald's personal life are kind of falling apart, right? So he has like a falling out with his landlord. He gets fired from his mail sorting job, which like, I don't know, that's got to be rough if you're fired from a job like that. But he had saved some money.
That'd be true.
And so he says, you know what? I'm going to open my own business because this is the type of guy that you want to own a business. So he's still using the name.
It depends on what it is, to be honest. Like, he obviously can clean things really well. So
he's still using the name Allard Edward Brennan, right? And he pays for what's called a mixed business. So in his shop, he makes sandwiches.
Nope.
And he sells a variety of small goods. It's also known for, it's like a dry cleaning company.
Well.
I don't know, but to me that sounds strange. That's a weird mix of things. So it said that he loved it, right? So he didn't have to deal with like a landlord kind of, you know, he didn't have to deal with a boss. Like he had his shop and above the shop is where he lived. And so he had this little like unit. It was all his. He got to do whatever he wanted and he was really excited. But also he said, well, I also have my own space now, so I don't have to be out in public if I want to kill people. Because that's
he like Todd, like Sweeney Todd.
Yes.
Just yeah. Come buy pies.
I love Sweeney Todd.
I know.
I literally have the soundtrack on my phone.
It's a very good soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think I recommended it to you. I just didn't know if you ever watched it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, So he's thinking, if I want to kill again, this is the perfect spot. So that does end up happening. Okay. So in November of 1962 now, so again, we're, you know, twice a year, feels like he wants to kill. So he goes out looking and he goes to, it's called the Wine Palace. Okay. And he's looking for a victim and he meets 42-year-old James Hackett. Now, James Hackett is they describe him as a petty thief and a derelict. Okay.
Oh.
And he's only been out of jail. He's only been out of jail for a couple of weeks when McDonald finds him. So they meet out, right? And then they say, hey, you know, McDonald says, hey, come back to my place. They take a cab and they go back to his place. They continue drinking until Hackett passes out. So this is a lot of what he did. He just gets them drunk, waits for them to pass out, and then he kills them. So he uses his knife again, from his shop, because he has a sandwich shop.
Oh, I think that's a tax write-off.
Yeah, probably. So he starts stabbing him, right? And the first hit, because again, he's asleep, he's passed out on the floor. So he starts stabbing him in his home, not in his shop, right? It's so upstairs. Mm-hmm. And he stabs him so hard that the knife went straight through his neck.
Ew.
Right. But incredibly, this wakes him up.
Oh, hell no.
Right. So he shields, you know, he's like shielding the next attack with his arms. And then, but like, McDonald is not expecting him to wake up, right? So he's like kind of, you know, he's got his hand on him and he's stabbing. But when he wakes up and tries to block it, he ends up basically in the scuffle and he knocks his hand off course and McDonald's like cuts his own hand. Okay, oh. So he slices his own hand. So now he's hurt and bleeding and this does not make him very happy. Which like, well, go figure. You don't like being stabbed. Weird. So
I just don't know where you get off thinking that that's, you know.
Right, that you can be.
How dare
right.
you, sir.
So he then, now he's like pissed, right? And now he's using like both of his hands and he's like plunging the knife into Hackett. And he ends up going through his heart and kills him instantly. But then he still just keeps stabbing and stabbing and stabbing and stabbing until he says that he had to stop to catch his breath. Okay. So he's sitting in a pool of blood. He's like, he says panting, like there's blood everywhere. It was splattered all over the walls and ceilings, puddles on the floor. He wraps his hand in a dirty dishcloth from his business. And ew. He tries to now cut off his junk, right? Because that's what he's going to do. But the knife has been used so much that it's not sharp anymore. And it's bent because he stabbed through him and hit the floor. Yeah. So he tried to literally like saw at him or like hack at him. He kind of stabbed at him a couple times. Nothing happened. But he's so tired that he falls asleep in the pool, like next to the body in all the blood, just falls asleep. Yeah.
That's horrifying. I mean, and now I'm just picturing drips coming through.
Thank you. Yes. So he wakes up the next morning. He's covered in blood. It's all now it's drying and sticky and gross. I mean, not that it wasn't gross before, but the pools of blood had soaked through the floorboards and had started.
They called it,
but they said it threatened to drip. So it didn't seem like it was actually dripping, but it was like, it's about to, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, like it's like coagulated.
Yes.
And it's,
So
like an icicle.
So he cleans himself off. He goes to the hospital to get stitches. He says, of course, that he cut himself in his sandwich shop with his sharp knives that he has to use.
It's a very vigorous sandwich is what that was.
Right. So he starts cleaning. He has to like tear up the floor because obviously it's not coming off, la, la, la. So then what he does is he strips Hackett down. So, you know, strips him naked. And then he puts him under the shop now. So he takes him downstairs and then under the shop. Okay. The space in between.
What?
And so then he keeps trying to clean, but every so often he'll go under there and move him further, like pull him like further away.
Ew.
Yes.
Like a weird trapdoor spider.
In the foundations. I know. So gross. So then he does this until he's basically jammed into a remote corner, out of view, can't be seen, like, you know.
I mean, I don't imagine that he would sell tons of sandwiches once the body starts to go, you know?
Yeah, well, so he also puts all his clothes and everything with it. So Hackett's clothes, not his own clothes. So he couldn't get all the blood stains off the floor, la, la, la. So he was like, if the police come to ask me questions, I'm going to get caught. Like, no question. Like, they're going to see everything. They're going to figure this out. Plus,
the telltale heart, man.
The cab driver who drove us here, like, I'm going to get caught, right? So he packs all his stuff and he gets a train and he moves, goes away. Like, and now, he dyes his hair, he grows a mustache, and now he's Alan McDonald. Okay, different name.
Cool. No relation.
Right. But then he keeps buying the Sydney newspapers to look for, right? So then, of course, they do find this body under the shop when people start smelling it. But they thought that the owner of the shop was the fourth victim of the mutilator.
So they marked him down as dead?
Yes.
Like the mutilator broke in, killed him, and he's been shoved. Do they look similar? I feel like that's just...
Nobody knew who the mutilator was. All they knew is that there's a dead body, and they assumed it was McDonald's.
Wow. How bloated must that corpse have been for them to be like, he's unrecognizable?
Yeah, oh, okay. Weeks. Well, so... Yeah. So then they mark him as dead.
Problematic.
Yeah. They mark him as dead. The people that knew him have like a little ceremony for him, but then he comes back.
Oh my Lord.
And then he runs into somebody he used to know. And the guy's like, you're dead. What are you doing? And then they're like, oh, and then the guy goes to the police and the police don't believe him.
What?
So then he goes to the newspaper and the newspaper runs an article, and then the police have to act. They exhume the body, and then they go back and look at all the clothing and everything left behind, and then they realize that it's actually this guy Hackett, not the guy who owned the shop. And so then they realize, like, oh, so the guy who owned the shop is probably the killer. So they also call this the case of the walking corpse, if anybody has seen that, because, again, they thought he died. You know what I mean? So all that to say... They catch up with him. They say, you know, as soon as they find him, he's like, yep, I did it. It's me. They extradite him back to Sydney, and he's going to face these murder charges, right? Now, there's a crowd at the airport when he's, like, flying in.
Why didn't he leave Australia and just pick up another name? I mean, he was in Canada. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like he, at that point, he's like, yeah, I'm done, you know?
Yeah, he had gone to Melbourne. And so he did. I mean, he tried to, you know, he traveled away from Sydney, and he started working for like a railway or something, like a train thing. I don't know.
A train.
Anyways,
thing.
So they were like, we got to see who this guy is, right? Like, we got to see this guy. And they said that everybody in the crowd was really disappointed.
Well, yeah.
Because he was thin and short. And like kind of small, you know, so they were like, this guy is the one that's been doing all of this. So he was charged with 4 counts of murder, right?
Well, he pleaded, as you do.
Right. He pleaded not guilty on the grounds of insanity. But they, you know, and he testified. So he told everybody about it. He talked about all of the things. So some of this is from like the trial and the court documents. And this whole thing was obviously very sensationalized. Mm-hmm. But they said that as he described some of his crimes, they said that some people in the jury fainted.
Oh.
So, you know, anywho. So
maybe it was just really hot in there, because unless he like got into the gore, like,
he did.
I don't feel like, oh, well.
He had to talk about all of it. They said that he described everything in a lot of detail.
In detail, but like, I don't know, unless he was talking about the texture of something, like, I feel like I would have been like, oh, okay, so you cut off his junk.
Oh, well, I don't know. You know, yeah. I don't
maybe
know.
Some more sensitive.
Some old lady passed out because of it.
Some old lady.
Yeah. So, so then they sentenced him to prison for life. He did say that he would offend again. So he's like, if I get out, I'm doing this again. So he was talking about that, but
you better lock me up.
Yes. But they also said that he was found sane. So they did not like allow him to keep that insanity.
Claim insanity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So then they sent him to the, like regular prison, you know, population.
Like
yeah. So then what he does there is he attacked another prisoner and almost killed him.
Oh.
With a bucket.
Well, with a bucket.
Yes.
Like, that must have been some bucket. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So then he was finally declared insane. And then he was moved to a psychiatric center.
Mm-mm.
All right. So all that happened. I know you just paused, so then I got thrown off. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So he attacks the other prisoner. So then they finally put him in a psychiatric facility. And then he does stay there for like 16 years, right? And then in 1980, he's found sane enough, at least at that point, to be put back into the mainstream prison. And then he did spend some time, like he got to kind of pick where he was, but he wanted just a quiet, nice prison.
Oh, yeah, because he's totally earned it. Like, what in the world? Did they honor his request?
Yes, and so it said that he requested to live in this certain section of the jail because it was quieter and he wouldn't be disturbed by the other prisoners, and they allowed him to. And so then he basically lives as a recluse. He would read and listen to classical music. Everybody called him Old Bill. Very picturesque. And so then he says in December of 2000, right? So he's been in there for a long time. He said that, or he declined to even go to a hearing to see if he would be eligible for parole. He was like, no, thanks. So he says, I'm institutionalized now. I have no desire to live on the outside. I wouldn't even last 5 minutes. I'm too old. And besides, I have everything I could ever want where I am. Okay.
Wow.
So he does sometimes take day trips, though. They allow him to take day trips. And then I include it because it's so ironic. So they allow him to take day trips. Now, again, he went in the 60s, right? So in 63, he was locked up and like sent to prison. Now we're in the 2000s. Okay. So they're letting him take day trips.
It's like that kid that I had profiled or like done something on where he took a day trip and then they murdered somebody else.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't do that. But the irony is that they go to a nearby city called Newcastle, and it says he doesn't particularly like what he sees. And then it says, because it's terrible out there. People aren't even safe in their own homes.
Cool.
So it was okay when he did it out in like, not in people's homes, but now, you know, now that.
Oh my gosh.
So, okay. Anyways, so he spends all of his life in prison, and then he ends up dying from, I don't want to say like natural causes, but he dies in the hospital. Let me see, from something. It was like a perforation of his stomach.
Ew.
Yeah.
How in the world?
Sorry, what did I just see that? But yeah, so he just dies in prison, and he died, like I said, in 2015. Well, in prison, but he did go to the hospital. And that was it.
I just can't even.
So all that to say, and like, you know, he does talk about his crimes in the interview with this one author. And he says that when the guy just said, why did you kill them? Like, why'd you kill all those men? And he says, I didn't murder those men. Okay. This is all a quote from McDonald. I didn't murder them. And then he says, physically, I did. There's obviously no doubt of that. But it is the other person who lives inside me that actually killed them. Now, here's where I don't like what he's saying. As a young boy, I was diagnosed as schizophrenic, and I still am today. This part gets me. Schizophrenia means split personality. No, it doesn't.
Okay. No, it doesn't.
Quote, and it was my other personality that killed those men in an act of revenge on the soldier who raped me. I then mutilated each one in a manner so that he couldn't rape anyone ever again. Quote, when I read about the murders in the paper the next day, it was as if it was all a dream. I knew that it was me that had done it, but it was as if I hadn't done it, if you can follow what I mean. Then I would just resume my life as normal until the urge to kill the soldier came over me again, and then I would go hunt again.
So he's like mildly describing disassociating.
Mm-hmm. But he's saying he's schizophrenic.
Split personality?
I know.
No.
I know.
No.
I know.
Which for me, because of that statement, and maybe I'm just like, I don't know, reading too much into it, but you know, that I think that kind of calls into question for me whether or not he was actually schizophrenic.
Well, he was diagnosed, though, twice.
Yeah, but, I mean, how many people were wrongly diagnosed with, like, back in the day, the multiple personality disorder, or DID in today's world, because they were able to fake it really well, you know?
I don't know. I mean, like, as a young kid, and then to have it happen again as an adult, like, I don't know. I don't know that he was faking it. But I do wonder about, like, I think he probably was actually schizophrenic, and I think he probably did have those urges, but I think he is, you know, using that as an excuse in the sense that, well, this other person wants me to kill, so I'm going to go kill. I mean, it's not really me, it's them, but I'm going to go kill, you know, so it does seem like he's kind of using it, you know, to talk about, like, why he's doing this, but also, but he admits doing it, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
I don't. And then to me, the fact that he was prepared.
Exactly.
Like, he knew. And so he talks about, like, the urge to kill again, but it's the other person in him that wanted to kill. So I don't really know. I don't really know.
It's, I mean, yeah, he definitely wasn't like a disorganized killer, right? Like, he planned in advance, he whatever. I mean, I don't know. It's just, But yeah, you're right. He did get diagnosed two separate times as schizophrenic.
Now, they and they talked about, you know, him being in the mental facility, you know, so after he was arrested and in the mental facility. So I assume at that point he got, you know, some sort of treatment and everything. So he was obviously in a space that then he could go back into the regular population, you know? So, I mean, it seemed to work out. He was happy. He was happy in prison. He was happy where he was. He didn't want to be let out, you know, and then he died.
I just, you know, I don't know. I have a lot of thoughts on that. Like, you know, okay, yay, he was happy, but does, like, you know, did he deserve to be happy? Like, who the F cares what you want, sir? Yeah. You didn't just murder people. You removed their genitals, you know, like, you know, and I'm glad that he did that after they were dead. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I'm not much of a proponent of the death penalty. I think it's antiquated, you know, and overdue, but there's, like, some people. there are some people where I'm like, that one.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool.
Well, and I mean, he got life in prison, you know, and I don't know that because he was trying to use the insanity plea, like, if truthfully, I didn't think about looking to see if the death penalty was a thing in Australia at the time. It didn't occur to me until right now, but, you know, I don't know. So he did get life in prison. And again, they did not take his diagnosis into account in any way. And so it wasn't until he got in and almost killed somebody else that then they were like, maybe we should put him in a different space. So,
And it looks like the death penalty was an option for him at that point. I mean, granted, he lived until what, 2015, you said? Which is wild to me.
But it doesn't say that he was given it just says that he was given life in prison.
Yeah, they didn't abolish the death penalty until 1985.
Okay. So maybe the insanity, maybe that's what that got him. I don't know. But that is William McDonald. And then, like I said, he ends up talking about his first victim, Mr. Hurst, and talking about the fact that no one really caught him. So then I won't go too much into it because we're running long, but they end up, like, exhuming his body twice. And they can't
let the dude rest.
I know, and they can't get conclusive evidence because he was strangled, so nothing's going to show up on his bones. You know what I mean? So poor Mr. Hurst was dug up twice, and they still couldn't conclude anything. And so they couldn't
for no reason. Yeah. Oh my lord!
So they couldn't really corroborate it, but he claimed he killed him. They couldn't, you know, they couldn't, like, verify it. So he just has, quote, just has four convictions, four murders.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. See, okay. And then that would make me kind of worried for like if Hearst had a spouse, but I don't think he did. Did he? Like, yeah. I mean, I wonder if death benefits get altered when someone's murdered as opposed to natural causes. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, what if that would have?
Yeah. I don't know. No, I mean, no, I don't know. They didn't talk about a wife. I think it was only Cobbin that they mentioned a wife and kids. But Man. Yeah, so that is the mutilator.
That was a good one. And I'm a little bummed because one of the ones I was looking at profiling, the one with the ironic name, mm-hmm. considering mm-hmm. where he lived and what his last name was, he was targeted gay people.
As well. Oh.
So now I feel like I can't do that one.
You can do it. Why not?
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll see. So like I said, this one is a little bit long, but we have been gone for a long time.
Been gone.
So
yeah, we have.
Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We are looking at, you know, we have made this a season two. We are looking at other ways of doing things, you know, so we are mm-hmm. kind of looking to play with some ideas. We have kind of discussed like a theme idea, you know, for different things. So we don't really know, but all that to say, we're going to try to keep recording and bringing you interesting cases to hear and discuss and to listen to. And we hope you enjoy. Again, if you do enjoy, we loved hearing from you guys. At some point, maybe the next episode, yes. We'll give shout outs because this one's just running too long, but we'll give shout outs to some of the people that did reach out. We appreciate everybody that did. Except for the mm-hmm. ones that were mean.
I mean, yeah, like whatever. Like, I don't know. It's even some of my favorite YouTubers that I think are great. Mm-hmm. There always seems to be someone in that group that's like, murmur, murmur, murmur. I don't, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But it is what all it is. That to say, thank you. I mean, even negative feedback to some degree, hey, it means that there's eyes on us at some point.
Yeah.
So, you know, all press is good press, I guess. I don't know.
In a sense. Yeah. But no,
we do appreciate you guys. And it was really nice getting to chat with some of y'all. You know, yeah, we'll have to do shout outs for sure. Case. I think that's a good idea.
Yes. So keep reaching out, keep giving us those reviews. And we read every single one and we think about you guys. So, welcome back.
Yay. Enjoy. As always, because we haven't said it in a while, reach out to us if you'd like to. Ratings and reviews are super appreciated. Unless you're not a nice person, then please, please don't. But
yeah.
But thank you so much for being here with us on our return to
podcast.
Talking? Podcasting. There we go.
Sorry. All right, you guys, stay safe. Have fun. Mm-hmm. And we will see you next time.
We will see y'all later. Bye, you guys.
Bye-bye.